Yeah, versus the Commissioner of Internal Revenue.
Good morning, Your Honors. My name is Joseph Sita, and I am proceeding pro se on my behalf. With the Court's permission, I would like to speak for about 5 minutes and hopefully reserve 5 minutes for rebuttal. May it please the Court, I'm here today because of my participation in a legitimate business opportunity which allowed me to take an allowable tax credit that's at the heart of the dispute in this appeal. For your information, there was no fraud ever found with Alpha. It was bad management that caused it to fail. Furthermore, the court record shows that Alpha, over a 14-month period, had a shortfall of only $2.73 per week per payphone. I am an investor owner of the pay telephones and service agreements that were later deemed unregistered securities because the receiver claimed I did not purchase. During bankruptcy, the payphone owner's attorneys attempted to recover the payphones and have a new management company service them. In August of this year, the receiver admitted that over 31,000 payphones had been purchased. If it pleases the Court, I have documentation. I'm not sure of the protocol.
What? Was this part of the record below, Mr. Sita?
Previously, no.
Well, we can't receive it here.
I can't even call anything about this document then, too?
Well, is this the document that you represent as a public record?
Yes.
Well, you can reference that if it's a public record.
All right. It's just that it basically confirms what I said about over 31,000 payphone owners now. The appellee disallowed a tax credit, claiming I did not qualify under 47 U.S. Code, Section 225, common carrier. The term common carrier or carrier includes any common carrier engaged in interstate communication by wire or radio as defined as a Bell operating company, and any common carrier engaged in interstate communication by wire or radio. However, I understood as a payphone owner that I would be a service provider under 47 U.S. Code, Section 255, providing telecommunication devices that accommodated usage by the disabled as required by the 1996 Telecommunications Act. In addition, in review of the Senate's committee report, paragraph 441, PL 101 to 508, nothing in the Senate's report required that the eligible person be engaged in a trade or business, only that an investment be made in the telecommunications industry, which the appellee doesn't dispute, that it made such an investment in pay telephones modified meeting the 1996 Telecommunications Act. Code Section 26, U.S. Code, Section 44 states as follows. To modify or to acquire equipment to comply with the 1990 ADA Act. However, the 1990 ADA Act was modified by the 1996 Telecommunication Act that allowed me to acquire said equipment to start a new payphone route business under the 1996 Telecommunications Act. And in contrast to the 1990 ADA Act, that required an existing business to comply. There are several underlying issues detailed in our brief. However, there are four overarching issues that I would like to detail for the Court. One, whether the appellee erred in applying 47 U.S. Code 225, common carrier, as in Arevalo and Crooks versus Commissioner, to the appellant. Two, whether appellant meets the 1996 Telecommunications Act requirement for the tax credit as a service provider under 47 U.S. Code Section 255. Providing telecommunication devices that accommodate usage by the disabled. Three, whether appellant was entitled to claim the Section 44 Disabled Access Credit for the payphones were in compliance with the Americans with Disability Act as amended by the 1996 Telecommunications Act. Whether the capital expense of $5,000 is in line with the Federal Communications Commission in 1999 docket number 96-128. In Arevalo versus Commissioner and Crooks versus Commissioner, the appellant used a circular argument when he applied Section 225 to the appellant. Furthermore, in Arevalo, the tax court failed to dismiss Arevalo for failure to prosecute. Instead, it held a full trial even though Arevalo did not show up for the trial.
Do you want to reserve the rest of the time for rebuttal?
Yes, please.
You may have it.
Thank you.
Ms. Mason.
May it please the Court, good morning, Your Honors. Christine Mason on behalf of the Commissioner in this proceeding. The main issue before the Court this morning is whether the costs incurred by Mr. and Mrs. Sita and their participation in a payphone investment program promoted by Alpha Telecom qualified them for two tax benefits. First, a business depreciation deduction under Section 167 of the Internal Revenue Code, and second, a disabled access tax credit under Section 44 of the Code. We submit to you that the tax court's decision in this matter was correct, that the expenditures made by Mr. and Mrs. Sita did not qualify them for either of these tax benefits, and the tax court's decision was consistent with the Fifth Circuit's holding in Arabello v. Commissioner and the Sixth Circuit's holding in Crooks v. Commissioner.
Is there any material difference between this case and those two?
No, Your Honor. If I may,
And no circuit, I take it, has ruled in the opposite direction.
No, they have not, Your Honor.
So we would have to create a conflict in the circuits.
That is correct. With respect to the business depreciation deduction, under Section 167 of the Internal Revenue Code, a taxpayer may claim a deduction for depreciated assets used in business due to their wear and tear. In order to claim this deduction, the taxpayer must demonstrate ownership over the asset in question. This Court, in Coleman v. Commissioner and in Durkin v. Commissioner, held that mere legal title is not sufficient to demonstrate ownership. The Court needs to look to more factors, primarily whether or not the taxpayers, in this case Mr. and Mrs. Sita, receive the benefits and burdens with respect to the payphones in question. It is important to note that the burden of proof here is on Mr. and Mrs. Sita to prove that they did in fact own these payphones. And this case simply involves a failure of proof. They offered nothing to suggest that legal title did in fact transfer from Alpha Telecom to the taxpayer. What they offered was a contract which had blanks, where normally you would find a serial number, a site designation for the payphones they actually bought. No such legal title was offered. Furthermore, Mr. and Mrs. Sita actually, in the proceedings in the tax court, conceded that no such telephones were ever installed on their behalf. Furthermore, they did not demonstrate that they received the benefits and burdens of ownership with respect to these phones. Under their agreements with Alpha Telecom, Alpha Telecom was to retain all control and responsibility with respect to these phones. They selected the sites for the phones, they installed the phones, they paid all licensing, insurance fees, etc. Mr. and Mrs. Sita, to the extent that they had control over these phones, didn't bother to exercise it. Pursuant to their agreements with Alpha Telecom, they could have demanded a monthly revenue statement, they could have checked to make sure that these phones were indeed installed where they were, and they did none of these things.
Does the record show that the Sitas obtained any revenue related to the phones other than whatever the tax deduction was that they were taking?
No, and actually, I mean, that's an excellent point, Your Honor. Pursuant to the contract, they were entitled to at least a minimum payment monthly. Approximately $50 a month. And presumably due to the bankruptcy proceeding commenced soon after their engagement in this investment, they never received anything in the form of payments, and they didn't even contact Alpha Telecom to say, where's our money? They really did, neither party abided by this contract as if it was in fact a sale. Further, they didn't shoulder the burdens with respect to these phones. Under their contract with Alpha Telecom received not only the majority of the profits, but there was a buyback provision under which at any time Mr. and Mrs. Sita could sell back their investment for a full refund to Alpha Telecom unless they made the election within the first 3 years of the investment, in which case they were charged a 10% restocking fee. Accordingly, we submit that Mr. and Mrs. Sita were not entitled to the depreciation deduction under Section 167 because they did not demonstrate that they received the full benefits and burdens of ownership with respect to these payphones. With respect to the Section 44 Disabled Access Tax Credit, Section 44 provides a credit for small businesses who expend an amount of money in order to comply with the ADA. The language of the credit states that an eligible assets expenditure entitles them to this credit. And in Arevalo v. Commissioner and in Crooks v. Commissioner, the two cases that are directly on point with respect to this case, the court there held that there cannot be an eligible assets expenditure unless the taxpayer, and specifically a small business, is required to comply with the Americans with Disabilities Act. There are only two groups of individuals to whom the ADA applies. First, an owner, operator, lessor, or lessee of a public place of accommodation. That's under Title III of the ADA. Under Title IV, a common carrier of telecommunications. Mr. and Mrs. Sita have conceded that they are not that they do not apply under Title IV of the ADA. And under Title III, they are clearly not an owner, operator, lessor, or lessee of a public place of accommodation. The ADA never applied to Mr. and Mrs. Sita, therefore they never were able to make an eligible access expenditure as required under Section 44 to claim that disabled tax credit. If the court has nothing further, we are content to submit the issues on our brief, and we respectfully request that you affirm the decision of the tax court.
Thank you, Ms. Mason. Mr. Cedar?
Thank you. I would like to state that shortly after we did our investment in the payphones is that when Alpha went bankrupt. So there was never any kind of a statement of where they were located. Basically what happened, the receivers stole the phones. So that's why they were never installed and never got phone numbers for them. And there was never any kind of an income statement as a result. I thought we did prove ownership of the phones by the bill of sales. And the fact also that, for some reason, the appellee's response does not address the 1996 Telecom Act at all, which remains at unanswered because the appellee is fully aware that the section U.S. 44 was amended by Congress to allow us the tax credit. So in conclusion, I would just like to say that I would respectfully request that the Seventh Circuit reverse the tax court's finding and opinion.
Thank you, Mr. Cedar.
Thank you.
The case is taken under advisement. Thank you, Ms. Mason. And the court will proceed to